Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
Ken is joining us from Cyberworld through the miracle of electronic hookup, and that's about as much of it as I understand. Ken?
I'm at Jack Reed's house because I know that the phone call is going to come any moment. Jack Reed will be the next running mate for the Democratic Party.
Senator Reed, give him my greetings, won't you? That's Jack Reed from Rhode Island, not Harry Reid from Nevada, correct, Ken?
That is correct.
You did go to the right, Senator Reid.
That is correct. Jack Reid, 5'7", and of course, if John McCain names his running mate Andre the Giant, then Reid is in big trouble.
So, while you brought it up, the vice presidential choices are quite on everyone's mind this week. In fact, they've dominated the news, even though there's been no news. So, it looks like it's either Joe Biden or it's somebody else. Ken, your comment?
The shortlist seems to be Joe Biden, Tim Kaine, the governor of Virginia, and Evan Bayh, the senator from Indiana. And I agree, Joe Biden seems to be everybody's favorite at this point.
Ken, you're not even going to throw in the name of Kathy Sebelius, the governor of Kansas?
I will not.
All right. Okay. That's your option. You can do whatever you
Joe
want.
Joe Biden will make history, of course, if he's the running mate. He's the only person in history who will begin his acceptance speech on Monday and end it on Thursday, which would be an amazing feat for the Democratic Party.
That he would end it that soon is an amazing feat. Now, he's going to actually speak on Wednesday night if he is the nominee. But,
it would top Bill Clinton's speech in 1988, right?
Yes, which I believe is still continuing as we speak. But Joe Biden brings something to the ticket. What does he have that perhaps Evan Bayh or Tim Kaine do not have?
Well, that's clear. He has the whopping 3 electoral votes of Delaware. But more importantly, he has great foreign policy credentials. Chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, an expert, I think, on foreign policy. But also, I think what's attractive about Joe Biden is that Barack Obama does not fare well as an attack dog. Joe Biden is a very effective puncher, if not a counterpuncher.
He's a slasher.
He is a slasher.
He can
and
do he, it.
And he does it. But he does it with a smile, and I think it would be effective. I think one of the things I'm really going to look forward to is Barack Obama coming out and announcing his running mate as being clean and articulate. And I think that would be a great way to introduce Joe Biden.
A phrase that Joe Biden once used to describe Barack Obama, much to his own grief, because it sounded patronizing, particularly in reference to the African-American candidate.
But you know something? Here's another thing, though. If Barack Obama is talking about change, and I think he's mentioned that word one or two times on the campaign trail.
Change.
Joe Biden was elected to the Senate in 1972. That's 36 years ago. I wonder if that would satisfy the need, the call for change that Barack Obama so eloquently talks about.
At the same time, Barack Obama himself at the top of the ticket is personifying whatever appeal of change this ticket is going to have, probably to the max. And if you put a second young person on the ticket, it would not probably make it any more of a change ticket. It would simply heighten the sense that it lacks experience. Isn't that what the McCain people are saying?
Ron, that is the most erudite thing you've ever said in the history of this podcast.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's why it will not be Kathleen Sebelius. That's why it will not be Tim Kaine, because
Kaine's been in office for 3 years in Virginia. No federal experience.
No foreign policy experience with Kathleen Sebelius. And if you go back to Evan Bayh, again, remember when Barack Obama was campaigning against Hillary Clinton, he said that he had the judgment in the beginning to oppose the war in Iraq, unlike Hillary Clinton. Now, of course, Joe Biden did vote for the war in 2002, as many other Democrats have. But Evan Bayh, the problem with Evan Bayh is that not only did he vote for it, he was a cheerleader for it for the longest time. And I think if the right wing of the Republican Party is going to object vociferously to any pro-choice running mate of John McCain, I suspect the left wing of the Democratic Party would object to anybody who was a cheerleader for the war.
But how does Joe Biden get a pass on that? He voted for the war, same as Hillary Clinton did. How does he get a pass from the anti-war wing, let us call them, of the Democratic Party?
Of course, that's the reason why I thought Jack Reed would make the most sense, because Jack Reed, even though he's the dullest person on the face of the earth, including the people in this podcast, they did vote against the war from the beginning, and Barack Obama opposed it from the beginning. But as you saw during the Democratic primaries and caucuses, Joe Biden, although he did not do well with voters, I thought on the debate stage, on the campaign stump, he was a very effective arguer, not only against the war, but also coming up with solutions like the partition stuff, things like that. I thought Joe Biden had at least ideas that other candidates did not have.
Proposals. He had many proposals.
He had proposals.
And he sounded like he knew what he was talking about.
Ron, speaking of proposals. Ron, speaking of proposals.
Yes. Yeah.
Will you marry me?
These kinds of outbursts are no longer going to be necessary. All right. So this week has been all about the suspense, primarily on the Democratic side, because people have been waiting hour by hour for this text message to come. But John McCain is still making up his mind, or so it would seem, with respect to his running mate. We're not going to learn that name probably until the time between the two conventions. That's the expectation now, that'll come right after the Democratic convention is over. Who do you think it's going to be, Ken?
Well, I mean, McCain is hinting that he would make the announcement on August 29th. It is the Friday right after the Democratic convention. It's also John McCain's birthday when he turns 93 years old, so I think it would be a very moving day for him, for the nation. Oh, unfortunately, though, that's the Friday of the Labor Day weekend, and it's kind of hard to imagine anybody paying attention to anything when everybody is escaping for the summer. But having said that, there has been some kind of hints from John McCain saying that he would not completely rule out having a pro-choice running mate, pro-choice on abortion rights.
That would be Tom Ridge. It would be Joe Lieberman, Democrat, right. Or independent, former Democrat.
Right. And of course, that trial balloon was quickly shot down, and I suspect that's exactly why the trial balloon was sent up there.
But now he's also asked Rudy Giuliani to be the first night of the Tuesday night
keynote speaker.
The main speaker for kicking off the convention on the first night people are likely to watch, because it's the first night after Labor Day.
Right. And you realize that
that's another pro-choice key position for another pro-choice person.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger will have a major speaking role there at the convention. Did you know there are more pro-choice Republicans at the national convention than there are on the planet?
At the same time, it also seems clear that with Joe Lieberman and Rudy Giuliani in key speaking roles, what we're going to see here is a return to the theme of 9/11, much as we saw at the New York Convention in 2004, where they feature the 9/11 tragedy and they feature the President Bush response to that. And this is what we hear about in terms of the strength of the Republican Party.
Well, in fairness, I mean, I think there's truth to that. There's also truth to the fact that the Republican Party still does better with homeland security, national security kind of issues. And Joe Lieberman being chairman of the Senate Homeland Security Committee would be a coup to have him speaking. But having said that, you know that Joe Lieberman's days as chairman of that committee is over. The fact that he's speaking at a Republican convention while chairing a Democratic-controlled a committee in the Democratic-controlled Senate is not going over very well. And so it's pretty remarkable, I mean, given the fact that 8 years ago he was the Democratic Party running mate, and here he is speaking at the Republican convention 8 years later. But, you know, stranger things have happened. We may very well see the 2000 Republican keynote speaker Colin Powell endorsed Democrat Barack Obama in the next month or so. So the boundaries seem to be switching.
And in both cases,
remarkable election.
And in both cases, it's the Iraq War issue that's really causing that switching, because Joe Lieberman was such a strong supporter of the war, and Colin Powell, of course, seems to have had his doubts about it. And now both of their careers have been rather violently wrenched in a new direction by the Iraq War.
One other thing I thought was interesting in the fact of the choice of keynote speakers, in a sense, Mark Warner, the Democratic keynote speaker, is a rising star of the party. He's likely going to be elected to the Senate this year in Virginia. So in a sense, the Democrats are looking ahead. Rudy Giuliani, obviously, I think his best days politically are behind him. He's no longer the mayor. He probably won't run for mayor again. He tried to become president of Florida this year. It didn't work. So I suspect I think it's interesting that the differences between the party, the direction they're looking, the approach they're taking.
All right. Fair shot. This week, the other dominant story, really, came from the two speeches that the two major candidates made at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention in Orlando, Florida. This is one of the stations on the cross that all presidential candidates must visit this particular convention in an election year and tell the Veterans of Foreign Wars that they'll be strong on non-national defense. Which of these two speakers, John McCain or Barack Obama, do you think made more believers down in Orlando this weekend?
Well, I think they...
Do you really need to hesitate on that question? It seemed to me that there was a 10-strike in the John McCain remarks, which were very tough, very harsh, went after Barack Obama big time. And while Obama came back and tried to give as good as he got, obviously the audience in this case feels a great deal more affinity with John McCain. He's one of them.
Well, in that sense, that's not a surprise. Just like with Rick Warren and the Saddleback Forum, I think that John McCain did better because, again, the subject matter, the audience, the intended audience is more of a John McCain audience. But having said that, I thought that that Barack Obama did make some important points in that if you look at the disastrous policies in Pakistan, Barack Obama made the point that John McCain followed the dictatorship of Musharraf, you know, to the end. But I don't know what choice McCain and the administration had in that sense. But in answer to the question, who I think performed better, who had a better, more receptive crowd, clearly I thought it was John McCain.
There was a substantive challenge in what McCain said that I think we'll hear again in the debates this fall. Let's listen to just this tape clip of what McCain said to the VFW.
First, he opposed the surge and confidently predicted that it would fail. Then he tried to prevent funding for the troops who carried out the surge. Not content to merely predict failure in Iraq, my opponent tried to legislate failure. This was back when supporting America's efforts in Iraq entailed serious political risk. It was a clarifying moment.
And the next day, Barack Obama went before the same audience and shifted the time frame from the surge decision to the decision to go into Iraq in the first place. Let's listen to what he had to say.
In the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, I warned that the war would fan the flames of extremism in the Middle East, create new centers of terror, and tie us down in a costly and open-ended occupation. Senator McCain predicted that we'd be greeted as liberators and that the Iraqis would bear the cost of rebuilding through their bountiful oil revenues. For the good of our country, I wish he had been right and I had been wrong. But that is not what history shows.
So fair to say that each of the candidates in the time frame that his opponent chooses to emphasize was wrong.
Or another way of looking at it, both speakers, what we just heard of McCain and Obama, were both right. That in a sense that, yes, the surge has been working, and yes, and Barack Obama did oppose it, so McCain is right in that sense.
One other thing that Barack Obama has to deal with that's coming up in all the polls, and that is a residual resistance to him personally on the part of Hillary Clinton voters.
I think it'll be very interesting to see the reaction. I mean, of course, Bill Clinton has his address on Wednesday. Hillary Clinton has hers on Tuesday. Tremendous emotion coming out of Denver. Obviously, there are a lot of people who felt that for all the differences, all the disagreements between the two camps, Hillary Clinton had to have her say. As we've said on this podcast before, she won more votes, more delegates than any defeated candidate for the nomination in history. So obviously, her day should be given. But the question also is that we still see polls that up to 25% of Hillary supporters will not or have not thus far come on to the Barack Obama bandwagon.
Well, that percentage is saying they're going to vote for McCain. 20 or
right.
25% are saying they're going to vote for McCain. Then there are the ones who are saying that they're undecided. So maybe he gets the undecided back. But clearly the ones who are angry enough to go all the way to McCain, who, of course, would agree with Hillary Clinton on a terribly small number of issues and disagree with her on all the others, that group of people, if they're really mad enough to go all the way to John McCain, that's the challenge. He's got to get those people back.
We're going to have a two-week respite of what the polls should look like, and then once the Republicans nominate McCain on September 4th, then we'll see where the two candidates, where the two parties stand up.
In other political news this week, a sad story coming from Cleveland, where Stephanie Tubbs Jones, the first African-American woman elected to the House from the state of Ohio, suffered a brain aneurysm and died.
58 years old. She was pretty a remarkable woman. You know, there was a lot of, she was one of the African-American members of Congress who endorsed Hillary Clinton early and
stuck with her all the way.
She said, look, you know, to say that just because I'm an African-American, I have to endorse Barack Obama. She felt that Hillary Clinton was the best candidate. She was an ardent defender of hers during the Rules Committee a few months ago in Washington when they were fighting over Michigan and Florida. God, that seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
But Stephanie Tubbs Jones was one of the most effective spokespersons for Hillary Clinton. She always had a smile. She always, you know, it's just remarkable. 58 years old, and it seemed like an unlimited future, and she's gone.
Some other issues in the news this week in politics. Ted Stevens, of course, the senior most Republican senator, from Alaska. He has been Mr. Alaska. The airport in Anchorage is named for him, but now he's been indicted on corruption charges. He asked this week a federal judge to move his trial on those charges out of the District of Columbia, where the charges were filed, to Alaska so he could defend himself in front of his own people. What happened there, Ken?
Well, not only defend himself in front of his own people, but have the ability to campaign constantly as well, because he has a tough the primary coming up on August 26th, but he also is behind in every poll against Mark Begich, the mayor of Anchorage. But anyway, he said that his failure to include all these gifts on his Senate forms means that that crime, or alleged crime, took place in the District of Columbia, and that's where the case should be held. The judge did say that he would hold the trial from Monday to Thursday, so Ted Stevens could go back to Alaska on the weekends and campaign. But it's not good news for the Stevens campaign, who obviously wanted to bring it back home, or as he likes to say, there's no place like Nome.
I think that'll blade. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from Denver, Colorado, and the Democratic National Convention. We'll be in St. Paul the week after that. I'm a political man,
and I practice what I mean. I don't know if he actually likes to say that. That's something I just thought he might like to say had he had a sense of humor and liked to make puns and things like that. But I'm not saying that he definitely said that out loud publicly.